At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. Welcome to this edition of The Miracle Within You, the show that looks at the science of psychology, case studies of amazing things that lie within us, which sometimes we don't even know about and don't even know how to access. I'm delighted today to have on the show Zander Keeg. Like myself, Zander is a UK Health Radio host, and he has a great show called The Umbrella Hour. Zander is also a licensed clinical social worker, and in years past, as a veteran and a social worker, he had done a lot of work with the military and veterans in relation to mental health. He's also won a variety of social worker awards, too. So we are privileged to have Zander with us today. Zander, great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Howard. It's great to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And the first and only question or set question that I will ask you is to allow the readers to get, or listeners to get to know you a little bit. By the way, mentioning readers, Zander has a new book coming out called The Third Space. We'll talk about that a little later. But to get the listeners to know a bit about you, how did you get to be at this point in your life?
Well, it definitely wasn't a straight line. That is for sure. You know, I originally reached out to you because I thought, I wonder if I have something that might be interesting for your particular focus of your podcast, because when I was 6 years old, my mother took me in for the MMR vaccination, measles, mumps, rubella, for first grade, and I had an adverse reaction to that immunization, and I ended up having seizures. I was taken by ambulance to the hospital. They were uncertain what was happening with me, and ultimately, I ended up in a neurological specialty clinic or hospital under medical coma for a few weeks because my seizures were so bad that they were worried that I'd have some damage to my muscles, you know, my nerves in my body. And when they brought me out of the coma, I was paralyzed on the whole left side of my body, and I was blind in my left eye. So this was at 6 years of age, and it's, you know, it's dawned on me over the years, I'm going to be 58 in a couple of weeks, that my life could have gone completely differently than it has gone, because prior to, I was a very different person, right? Mm-hmm. Even as a child, it was very different. My personality was different pre encephalitis, which is what I had, and post-encephalitis, my relations to the world and the world around me and the people in my world significantly changed. Now, this is not something that I actually recall. This is based on stories told to me by my mother and my father and other family members. But it's always struck me as interesting, like, I wonder what it would have been like. You remember that movie, like Sliding Doors? Right? It's like, I wonder what my life would have been like had I not had an adverse reaction to the MMR vaccination. And so that's like that's the first, well, it's actually not the first little, off ramp in what would be maybe a different kind of life. It actually started prior to that, which was that when my mother was pregnant, she was told by the doctors that the infant inside of her was deceased, and that they needed to take me out. They said they couldn't get a heartbeat, and so they were doing something akin to a cesarean-like, procedure to pull me out because I was, what was I, 7 months at that point, and they found that I had a very faint heartbeat. So they put me in an incubator. So I might not have even been born, right? Because who knows if they would have done some other procedure that would have terminated my life. So that's my like birth through age six, right? That kind of what people might now refer to as like medical traumas,
Yeah, no question.
right? That can get sort of stamped into who we are without our even knowing it, because it's like pre-consciousness in some ways. And so that's kind of an interesting thing for me to consider when I'm thinking about like how is it that I got to where I am now and who I am now. And again, it wasn't direct, it was a circuitous pathway. One of the it wasn't just the paralysis. I'm no longer paralyzed. I was given physical therapy and speech therapy and occupational therapy, and so I was rehabilitated, to a somewhat new normal for me, mobility wise and academically. I went back into school. I was in special education, and I had some trouble in school, and I had some trouble just behaviorally, and so I ended up spending, gosh, what was it, 3 months in a adolescent psychiatric unit, and locked, and then I was sent to a group home, and I spent, I don't know, almost 2 years in a group home for delinquent teenagers. And then I went home, but I wasn't home for very long, maybe a month, and I must have been struggling because I took a handful of, I don't know, aspirin or Tylenol or something like that with some alcohol, and ended up being, taken to the emergency department. And then I spent another year in a psychiatric hospital. So, and again, a locked unit. And so that was an interesting period of my life. That's from like 13 and a half to maybe 16 years old. I mean, it was my adolescence, basically, the at least the most formative years of adolescence. And so that's another point in time where I'm like, well, if I hadn't had the encephalitis, I probably wouldn't have ended up in special ed. I probably wouldn't have ended up with behavioral issues, and I probably wouldn't have been sent to, institutions and group home in a group home. But that did happen to me, and I did my best, to deal with all of that. But along the way, I also had these really cool parents. Well, I should say a cool people who happened to be my parents. Neither one of them were good at being a parent, but they were really cool people, and they were a lot of fun, and we had fun together. My parents were divorced, but my mother was a psychic and ran a little shop that had tarot cards and candles, and she did past life, readings on people. And so when I would go to visit her, I'd be around this really interesting group of people that were into astrology and metaphysics, and it was very interesting. But I grew up with my father as a single parent, and my dad was an engineer, but he was also into EST, and he went to Esalen all the time for classes, and So he was a interesting left brain, right brain kind of guy. Ultimately, he became a massage therapist and spent 27 years doing massage therapy after he left his engineering career. And so both of them introduced me to what I consider to be not just interesting, but very impactful systems, perhaps. One would be Church of Religious Science through the work of Louise Hay. And positive affirmations. That was my mother. On my father's side, so to speak, it was Taoism and Buddhism. He was very interested in those things, and so he brought a lot of books home, and so I was able to learn a lot from those readings. And then my father took me to the Unitarian Universalist Church, and it was there that I learned about the Transcendentalists. And the American Stoics, like Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson. And so, I mean, I'm getting all of this really good information and education. And I'm also learning things like meditation, which my father took me to the Transcendental Meditation Ashram for my 12th birthday to get my mantra. That was my present. Right. And so I've been meditating since I was 12, which is, not a normal kind of thing. It was this really cool ashram in Hermosa Beach, California, near where I grew up. And then he enrolled me in the children's EST trainings. So it's like, yes, I was struggling with my schooling and I was acting out behaviorally and I was having difficulties. And at the same time, I was learning to meditate. And I was being put up on stages and told to like talk to the people, right? My dad was a trainer with EST for like 8 or 9 years, and he would say, go tell the adults what it's like to be a kid in the 70s, right? So I started my public speaking career at age 10 because my father wanted me to talk to these adults. And so it's thankfully it's this combination that I think really kept me from completely derailing,
Yes.
and ending up in the juvenile justice system, or even worse, the criminal justice system, because I was somewhat of a petty criminal, but it was childish stuff. But it could have been worse,
Yes,
right?
I
It could have
could.
been
Yeah.
worse because I didn't have much regard for doing the right thing. I think I was angry. And I don't know if that was just a natural reaction to, the brain damage. What happened was the virus from the rubella part of the MMR went into my brain. So it's not your standard traumatic brain injury because there was no impact to my brain. It was a viral infection in my brain. And so I don't really know what you call it other than TBI or, encephalitis, but, there's no way to know what it did and didn't cause along the way. And also just certain life circumstances could have also led to my, behavioral problems. But whatever it is, I didn't go too far off course. And ultimately, I reached an age when I was about 18 where I figured I better do something. I better start getting, my life in line because I've got a lot of years ahead of me and I don't really know what I'm supposed to do because I had dropped out of high school. It still took me 2 years to figure out what I was going to do, and that was I joined the US Coast Guard, right? So I joined the military, and that got me on a completely different path. And since then, I mean, since I've been out of the military, I was in law enforcement for a little while. I did undercover narcotics work. I worked in natural foods also for a little while. I was a cook at a two vegetarian or vegan restaurants. I worked in natural foods in a co-op down in Ocean Beach in San Diego, California. So I was doing, sort of a little bit here, a little bit there. And when I was 30 years old, I thought, well, maybe I should go to college. Like, maybe that will be helpful for me. I'm really sick of working and I want to take a break from working. So, I mean, how hard can it be, right? Of course, now you remember I dropped out of high school and went into the military, a couple of years later. So most people would consider me not to be the brightest, because of that. But I ended up applying to a college, just one, and I was accepted, and I went, and I did well, and I was in student government, and I did well. I graduated in 3 years because I went to summer school, and I was probably in my sophomore year when my graduate grad or not my graduate my academic advisor said to me, "You should go to graduate school." And I remember saying to her, "What's that?" I didn't even know what graduate school was. My parents didn't even finish high school, right? So it's like graduate school. And so I looked into it and I found a university that had a graduate program that I liked. Again, just one. I applied, I got in, I went, I did well. I have a master's of science in conflict analysis and resolution. And then when I was about to finish up with that, I thought, oh, I should do a PhD in this. And so I applied to the PhD program. I was actually accepted, but then I decided, you know what, before I do the PhD, I'm going to go to seminary because I've always been really fascinated about religion and theology and spirituality. And I was especially interested in learning why is it that people think that religion is a good reason to show up at like gay pride parades and spit at people and yell at them and scream at them and throw things at them and they're holding up signs that are some religious, statement. I thought, what are they doing and why do they think their religion supports that? So I went to seminary. I did a master's of theological studies. That's where I met my wife, Margaret. We're just a couple of months away from our 22nd anniversary. And yeah. And so then I thought, well, now what am I going to do? I mean, what am I going to do with a conflict analysis and resolution master's and a theology master's? But I dibbled and dabbled in a few different, jobs. And then I thought, okay, I need something that's more legitimate, something that gets you a career. I didn't have a degree that led to a occupation or a career like accounting or physical therapy, something like that. So I went and I did a master's of social work. Again, I found a university I liked, program that I liked. I applied, I got in, I went, I did well. And so I've been doing social work now since 2010. And I love that. As a veteran myself, I wanted to work with veterans. So my first job out of school was working with the Department of the Veterans Affairs. And after a few years of that, I transferred to the Department of Defense and worked with the Navy. And then I transferred from San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida, because my wife's family had moved to Florida. And so that's where we are now. We were both in California most of our lives before that. And so came out here. And my father came with us. My father was born and raised in Mexico, but he was in the Marine Corps and then spent the rest of his adult life in the United States after getting out of the Marine Corps. And he came with us. And within about 2 weeks of us getting to Florida, I noticed that something was off about my dad. Turns out he had the early stages of dementia. And so I was his caregiver for the last 5 years of his life. He just passed in February. And yeah, so the last 5 years, a lot of my life was focused on my work and family, and then being this caregiver for my father. It started where he was living with us, and then he went into independent living and an assisted living facility, and then he went into assisted living and then nursing care and then ultimately hospice care. But I was his power of attorney and medical proxy. So I was very much involved. I visited him as often as I could. He was in Jacksonville for a while, then Daytona Beach, and then Orlando. It took me a while to move him to Orlando because of all of the COVID restrictions with the nursing homes. But he ended up maybe the last 2 years, he was here with me in Orlando. I saw him 2 or 3 times a week. So a lot of my last, few years have been focused on that. And so the work I've been doing, I stopped doing regular social work about 4 years ago, and I've been doing consulting and training since then, and also working on caregiver programming.
Great, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, that is such a diverse background. I'm really looking forward to diving into some of the stories and the things you've learned from all of those different roles that you've had. So that's awesome. Thank you so much. Let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll dive right in to some of the experiences you've had working in these various groups. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. And today I'm delighted to have with us Sandra Kegg, who has a very diverse background, talking about many aspects of life, many different disciplines he's worked in. And Sandra, you must have, both in terms of your own looking back, we all do, your own personal experiences and transformation, things you didn't realize at the time, the power of them subsequently that occurred to you, and in working with other people too. You know, we all learn from our clients and we all learn those lessons by seeing other people transform. And in a way, that's what this show is about, transformation. So I wonder what comes to mind when I ask you that about either your own personal transformation or your witnessing other people's transformation.
Well, it makes me think about a question that I have gotten several times over the course of my adult life when I tell people stories about my life. I didn't go into any detail at all about some of the more tragic things that occurred in my life because I don't like to focus on those things, you know. I've lived through them, I've moved past them, but I've had people say to me, "How is it that you're not crazy?" Right? Like, how did you come to a point in your life where you can just function? I've adjusted. I have a happy marriage. I have been successful in work. I've been, you know, involved in volunteer activities for what, 30 something years. Like, how is it that I'm not dealing with anxiety or depression? I've never had a diagnosis of anxiety disorder or major depressive disorder. I don't feel those things. And it took me a while to realize, you know, I had to think about it, like, gosh, I don't know. Like, why aren't I more disturbed? And I think it's a combination of a couple of factors. One, I think it's the introduction of meditation into my life. I think it's also the fact that I had enough positive things happen that the negative didn't overtake. Because, I mean, we know that the negative things that occur to us are the things that we remember most.
Yep.
Right. We need, what is it, like 3, 4, 5, you know, good things to, you know, counterbalance one bad thing. And so I had enough, right? I had enough positive experiences. I had enough good people. I don't know that I had a secure attachment for most of my, you know, childhood and adolescence and even into my 20s. I was probably into my 30s. Mid-30s when I finally had a secure attachment. But, you know, now that I'm almost 60, it's been a good, you know, number of years where things have been much more stable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's part of it. You know, one of the things that that occurred to me a few years back. In 2018 is when I was, one of the awards I got for social work was through the National Association of Social Workers California chapter. They gave me the Social Worker of the Year award. And I remember in my speech when I was, I was going up to accept the award. And in my speech, I made some remarks about how I wanted people in the various types of social work that they were doing, whether it was a social worker in the schools or in a, pediatric setting, in a treatment setting, in a university, in a community-based hospital, wherever they were, I wanted them to consider that when they were encountering somebody that they wanted to dismiss, right? They wanted to write them off because they were disruptive, because they were a problem, because they weren't going along with what you wanted them to go along with, to hold as much grace, right, and open space to see how that individual is going to develop, right? Because I was underappreciated, I was dismissed, all of those things were true. But and I think this is the most crucial aspect of why I think, I'm not crazy, and life has gone well for me, is that I have an internal locus of control. And so, but had I had an external locus of control and I had taken in this lack of appreciation and this being dismissed, and even in some ways, rejected by teachers and therapists, and administrators and people in my family to a certain degree, life could have been very different for me. And so I asked them, like, keep this in mind, right? Like, why is this person behaving how they're behaving? Like, what is it that has occurred in their life that is manifesting in this way? And I said, because if all these people had given up on me, and some did, but not all, right? If all of them had given up on me and I internalized that, I wouldn't be standing in front of you, is what I told them. I wouldn't be here, right?
Correct.
I'm only here because, well, because that defiance in me is a protective factor.
Yeah, and that's about adaptation, and you make a really good point. You lived it, really, is obviously negative things, weight you down a whole lot more. And they tend to be the fog that clouds everything. So we have to be careful about that. But also the other point you made is a good one, is even when bad things happen to people, they also have, if they have good things happening to them too, that does help ultimately, maybe not at the time, but ultimately helps them to stay focused and adapt successfully, because life is about adaptation. And so even when you think the worst things are happening to you, if you can still derive some positive things in your life that help you keep moving forward, that is the most important thing, not to be buried under a mound of negativity.
Absolutely. And it's, people would ask the question, or might be asking the question right now, like, well, how do you not become overpowered by all the negativity? How do you not end up, on the bo at the bottom of the heap of people's, expectations and disappointments? And again, I think there's two factors for me, is that one, the meditation, which as a child, it was a walking form of meditation. And so it got me outside. I was moving around, which is good, right? And I was using a mantra-based meditation, so that's also helpful, that repetitiveness. And I was walking out in nature, so I was exposing myself to the fractals in nature, which are good for stress reduction. But then it was also the EST training, going through EST training for a few years, starting at the age of 9 and all the way to about 11 and a half, almost 12 years old. I think the takeaway from EST for me as a kid was that it helped me develop resiliency, right? They taught us what would now be called emotional intelligence skills and strategies, right? They taught us how to regulate our emotions, because they would get us up in front of a room. They would tell us to, they would ask us a question. We'd have to answer the question. Usually it was like a storytelling kind of response, and then we would be critiqued, right? And so children don't know how to be diplomatic in their critique. They don't know how to be thoughtful. They're just like, that was stupid, and so they wanted us to hear, in whatever form it came, right? Because I can't control what comes out of other people's mouths and what's in other people's heads. I can only control how I respond to it. I can either react to it or I can respond to it.
Correct.
And I guess also some of the training about, say, Stoicism and Transcendentalism, that was also pretty helpful, but that's pretty esoteric, and so it wasn't skill building in the same way that the meditation and the est, training format was.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I wonder what you feel about, that meditation and the est was obviously so crucial in your ability to deal with all the difficult situations in your life. Massive. What do you think about the concept of actually teaching people in school things like meditation and mindfulness so they can develop emotional intelligence, one of the most important life skills?
Oh, I'm definitely a big fan of teaching mindfulness in schools, and I know there are programs all around the country that do that, all around the maybe even around the world. There might be different programs teaching meditation, teaching mindfulness. If nothing else, we could get kids doing laughter yoga. That would be great to teach to children. I know that in a lot of schools they have SEL or social emotional learning, and prior to July of 2020, the way social emotional learning was taught was teaching children how to be resilient. But they rewrote the curriculum and released it as transformative social emotional learning, or TSEL, and it's not the same anymore. It actually is more about teaching children to call out microaggressions than building resilience. And I do not support that newer version of SEL, but I do support the older version and things like it. As a matter of fact, that's what I do for a living now, right? When I say I do consulting and training, what I really do is I provide virtual trainings on psychoeducation topics, right? So things like how to regulate your emotions, that's a standalone training I do. And it's a 60-minute training. And I talk about, all the different factors. I give, tools and strategies. We do a little practice. I do another full hour on distress tolerance, and another hour on conflict mitigation, and another one on mental fitness, right? These are tools and strategies that some people get in their earlier life through really good and emotionally mature role models, typically parents, grandparents, whomever their caregivers, caretakers. I didn't have that. My parents are kind of, into their own self-actualization more than mine. Again, good people. I turned out okay, but so I needed to learn that a little bit later in life, and so I got a little bit of it, but I needed practical skills in order to put it into place. I mean, adolescence is going to be hard, regardless of whether you have these tools and strategies. Puberty just takes you offline a little bit in how you're going to react and respond to people. But if we can make it through that, then we're probably going to be okay. So I'm a big fan of teaching those skills, and my primary customer, so to speak, are multinational corporations. So they have seen the benefits of giving their employees access to these mental fitness and emotional wellness webinars. So they're the ones that are contracting, and then I'm doing these workshops for 200, 300, 400 employees at one time via Zoom. So
Wow,
it's
that's great.
a wonderful job. I love it.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you're excellent at it. That's the other thing about sort of teenage years is, the frontal lobe, which is the basis of control, isn't really fully developed till your mid-20s. for most people, and that explains the sort of impulsivity of teens and youth. They actually don't have the infrastructure fully in place to be able to do that. I do think that something like meditation, though, probably really helps that, because that really is, I think, a miracle within us, because it allows you to see everything in a slightly different way, including, of course, your thoughts and emotions. And that's the central point of emotional intelligence.
Well, I think there's a factor when you talk about, the executive functioning, the prefrontal cortex coming online mid, sometimes late 20s. There are certain circumstances that can delay that, right? So drugs, alcohol, brain injuries, viruses in your brain like me, issues about adverse conditions, in childhood. And so for some people it can be delayed. And I mean, there are people where it's just never going to really come online.
We're never going to come online. Yeah, someone later, I used to say adolescence ends at 35, which is by which point most people have developed it if they're going to develop it. And it's a huge function. People need to understand that there's these parts of the brain that are responsible for self-control. And if you haven't got that self-control, that self-discipline, you're going to really struggle, especially in difficult situations.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've told people over the years I was a very difficult adolescent. I was at a function with my father. We were sitting up in front of the room and talking. We were doing some sort of train, not a training, but like a talking and or a talk. And I remember turning to my dad and saying, I didn't like you very much when I was a teenager. And he turned and he chuckled and he looked at me and he said, I didn't like you much when you were a teenager. Right? It's sort of, I mean, that's the thing. It's like being a troublemaker in your adolescence is difficult, but not unexpected.
No.
When you're like that in your 20s and 30s and 40s, it is not a good look.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had a client. He married this woman. She had a teenage son who was pretty difficult. And even though he was a new stepfather, he really put a lot of barriers and discipline up to this kid. When he was 16, 17, the kid goes off to college. He comes back one visit when he's in his 20s. And he says, Dad, when I was in my teens, I hated you for what you were doing. But now I can't thank you enough. He went on to go to Ranger school and become a Ranger.
Oh, very cool.
So yeah, we have to understand we go through those phases of life. Okay, we'll get back more in the next section after this short commercial break about exactly what you do, how people can reach you, and your new book. We'll be right back.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. Today I'm talking with Zander Kegg. Really interesting story. A lot of transformational things happened to him in his early years and subsequently, which I think really helped him, I'm sure, be understanding and very adaptive and resilient in his life. Zander, you told me that you either have just released or about to release a book called The Third Space. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Well, I did just release it. I started promoting it on June 1st.
Okay.
It's on Amazon. So it's called The Third Space, A Nonconformist's Guide to the Universe. And what it is, it's part memoir and part self-help. What I decided to do is I wanted to share to a completely different audience these psychoeducation tools and strategies, right? Emotional wellness, mental fitness, conflict mitigation. I want to be able to teach those tools and strategies. And I decided I'll use my life as the how to demonstrate how these work, you know, how they apply to our everyday circumstances. And so I throughout the book, I talk about things like trust and curiosity and gosh, I mean so many different things. Being I have a one chapter where I'm talking about being childlike, having a childlike interest in things, awe and wonder. And I differentiate between childish and childlike. And so I'm basically just talking about like these are the things I've learned over the course of my life. This is how they helped me. And you know, maybe it'll help you too, right? To the reader. It's written in the style like I didn't sit and type this manuscript. That's not my way of communicating. I'm a talker, right? I have a bachelor's in speech. I'm a social worker. I teach, I train. And so what I decided to do was instead of typing a manuscript, I talked it and it was recorded and then it was transcribed and then a team of editors, you know, edited it. And so it has this easy readability to it as a result. I've gotten some, you know, people are still reading it because it just came out, but a couple people had advanced copies and wrote some really nice reviews that have been up on Amazon. And I just heard from somebody yesterday that they're gonna about to put one up and they're even gonna promote it on their Substack. So I'm very happy about that. That it's people are finding, well, one person used the term transformational, right?
Right.
In how they were describing it. The forward writer is Daryl Davis. If people haven't heard of Mr. Daryl Davis, he is single-handedly one of the most amazing and influential men. He is a black man who sits down and has conversations with members of the KKK and neo-Nazi groups. And then over the course of weeks or months or years, they ultimately make the decision to leave those hate groups, renounce their hatred of black people or whichever kind of people that is at the top of their list. And he's collected now over 300 robes and hoods from former Klansmen.
Wow.
And so that he's done TED Talks, he's had a documentary, he's written a couple of books. I had the privilege of working with him for about a year and a half. And so I reached out to him to I gave him a copy of the manuscript and said I'd love to know if you'd be write me a forward. So I'm very grateful that he found something in my writing that he could appreciate and wrote the forward. So that to me, it's like, yes, here's the book. I've written it. It was in my head for about 5 years and I just had to get it out of there. I'm happy to see it in print. I'm even more pleased that Daryl Davis is you know, is endorsing the book.
Yeah,
That to me says a
man.
lot because of the kind of person he is
Yeah,
and who, you know, what he does.
that's excellent. I've ghostwritten quite a number of books and a few mem self-help books, memoir self-help books. And honestly, I think that's a great way of doing it. It's not just you're telling people, you're showing them you've walked the walk. And this isn't just all intellectual facts. This is at the heart of the experience, which is what you have to know, right? You have to
Yeah,
know.
and it's not 100%. Like,
No, that's right.
I can't do it 100% of the time. I'm, you know, I'm a human being who, you know, every once in a while somebody will do or say something and it'll get right past my, you know, my little things that alert me to, you know, to anything that's sensitive. It's pretty rare, thank goodness. You know, you do get better and better at it as you practice it, but every once in a while, I'll be like, wow, I really flew off the handle with that one.
And then you had mentioned your coaching. You do work with corporations, sounds like large corporations, in terms of sort of well-being in the workplace, a little bit more specific, perhaps resilience too. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's they are corporate clients. I have a contract with a mental health employee benefit company. And so they have the corporations as their customers, and then I present my workshops to them. And then on the side, I do individual contracts with individual corporations. And so I've been very fortunate for the last 4 years to be able to do these emotional intelligence and mental fitness webinars where I teach skills like how to manage your stress, which starts with what is stress? And is there any good form of stress? And what are the different ways you can manage it? I teach people things like how to get a good night's sleep. Well, what does that mean? What is the sleep science? What is sleep hygiene? How does a circadian rhythm work? What does it do? What happens when it's dysregulated? And so I'm teaching people the things that they don't necessarily already know about. Like we all sleep, but we don't know why we sleep. But you can read the book, Why We Sleep. But most people don't know why they sleep and what can make getting to sleep easier and getting a good night's sleep easier. It's actually quite simple. They're not easy things to do, but it's quite simple. And so it's the same with conflict mitigation. It's pretty simple, but it's not easy. So it's teaching people, here are the tools, here are the strategies. Now practice them and then keep practicing and keep practicing. And so it's just a reinforcement of these strategies and these skills and also our values and how we can use our values to, make it more likely that we'll succeed at whatever we're doing. Because if it's not attached to a value, it's going to be more difficult to stay with it, to have the discipline to stay with it.
No question about that. Something that I found, in the course of my career, I was very, I did all my training in very behavioral institutions at the time when it was all behaviorism and ABC, and I was into my career of trying to help people change behavior. And I thought, no one's ever taught me or told me about communication, and communication is the key thing. How I communicate this is going to be important. Is not it's the key. How I engage people, that is the key. How do you engage? That's your job. It's not to tell them, it's to engage them. And
Invite.
yeah, and that is true across medicine. I mean, if you look at the reasons why people quit their doctors, it's because they do not feel the person is treating them as a real person. Right, and is engaged and interested in them. If you just think you're a number in a case, forget it. It's not going to work. It just doesn't. And
Yeah. I think the research about psychotherapists and the success of psychotherapy relies on rapport. It's like it doesn't matter if you're doing CBT or DBT or motivational interviewing or short-term, brief, focused. It's rapport. That's the linchpin in all this.
that's why people will come back to see you, because there is a rapport there, and that can build the right mindset and motivation in a person who has to do the hard work of changing some of
Yeah.
that behavior.
So it's like the workshops that I do, it's like, yes, I have the clinical training. Yes, I have the specific knowledge because I've got slides in front of me with speaker's notes. But there's another quality that I have that maybe other people have it, of course. It's not just me, but is that I know how to present. I emote. I'm a presenter. I'm a facilitator. That's what I do. And so it's a way to keep the people engaged because I could be dull, right? I could be very monotone in my presentation. I could, leave out any, little bits of humor, little personal anecdotes. Right? You know the difference between, when you go to a training and somebody's engaging it or not.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think that's a particular quality that, if I were to look back at my whole life, it's like, yes, I developed resiliency, but I also developed empathy. And part of empathy, I think, is taking a pulse, on the room, so to speak. Now, when I was younger, I was taking a pulse because I was trying to keep myself out of danger,
Right.
right? But I had to adjust that because that was a coping mechanism that wasn't going to serve me in its current. I needed to adjust it because it was going to destroy every relationship I was ever in if I was constantly trying to mind read every partner I had, So I had to learn how to adjust it. So it's like, how can I use that empathy, to, I don't need to be kept safe anymore. Now I need to be able to build rapport. So I think it comes from the same place. I just had to tweak it so it could serve me still.
Absolutely. Again, that's critical. I mean, honestly, I think that's a critical skill in almost every profession, certainly parts of it. I mean, you look at the medical profession, nursing profession, you look at teaching, you look at public relations. I mean, anywhere where there is an interaction where you are interacting with somebody else or a group, you got to talk to them in a way that engages them. Without the engagement, blah, 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 blah. When does this thing finish? Right? And clearly you have that skill, which is why I'm sure you're so good at it, because that's important. And it stuns me that, in critical areas like medicine, that I don't think is even taught in school. It isn't. So I mean, I
Bedside
understand
manner.
why. I understand why. But, fact is, it is critical. And on the show, I've had people who, were told one thing by a physician and said, "No, I'm not going to, I don't believe that. I don't believe I'm going to die. No, I'm not going to." They were really resilient and they didn't, and they thrived, defied all medical, conventional medical diagnosis. And you've got to stimulate that. I mean, obviously, you can't tell everyone and they'll be okay because they're not. But you've got to stimulate them. You've got to get them engaged, really. And then when that energy is there, who knows what can happen, right?
Well, I remember my mother told me that when I was taken out of the coma, basically when I was being discharged from the hospital after I had gone through enough of the physical therapy and occupational therapy and speech therapy, they're like, they don't need to be here anymore, right? And I asked my mom, like, because there was a group of us, it was a bad batch. There were a group of us that got really sick. And I remember asking my mom years later, how were the other kids? How did they do? And she said, they didn't do very well. She said, you were probably the one that did the best in your rehabilitation. I was like, oh, I wonder why. And she said, well, the doctor said it was because you were so rebellious. Like, I got to get out of here. Like, I was determined to get
That's
out of
right.
there.
That's right.
So
Absolutely.
I pushed through all the pain of having to squeeze a ball in my hand or walk on those, in those with leg braces on or crutches.
Absolutely. You got to be rebellious. Sometimes you got to get angry.
Yeah. But it's like knowing how to do it, right? As a teenager, I did it in ways that didn't serve me, got me into a lot of trouble. But I figured out over the course of my life, like, oh, okay, like there are real reasons to be angry. There are things that we should rebel against. It's just how to do it so that I don't end up in jail or punched in the face or something.
Well, this has been awesome, Xander. It's great talking with you. We'll probably have to do this again. For those of you listening, don't forget Xander has his own show, The Umbrella Hour, and his new book, The Third Space. Got to take a look at that. And if people want to reach out to you, where do they find you?
The easiest way is just through my website, xanderkeig.net, xanderkeig.net. I'm also on LinkedIn if people want to connect with me there. And I have a Substack, and so people can look for the third space on Substack. But my website is good. Through the website, they'll also be able to find the direct link to the umbrella hour so they don't have to, search for it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time. Great having you on the show. Great to meet you. And we'll keep in touch and we'll probably do this again.
Thank you so much, Howard.
This episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.